Hey everybody, let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from industry standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business, I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to barrykatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.
Be nice to yourself and be patient with yourself. For me, when I started comedy, I literally was like, Morgan, give yourself 10 years to do this. If you can't make money in 10 years, you could do something else. And I think now younger people, they see people go viral and they're like, all right, I have to be successful tomorrow. And that's kind of not a, that's not a career, you know? So anytime you want to try something, give yourself, I give myself 2 months when I'm trying something new. That's the time period. So I'm gonna do this for 2 months. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to try something different. So be patient and just give yourself time. And also, like, if it's not working and you don't like it, be honest with yourself.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. Glad you're here. Had such an amazing time in Montreal. Incredible, incredible performances, conversations. Just one of the greatest places to see comedy and to be around some of the most wonderful comedians in the world. And thank you so much for all your support. If you need to reach me, you can do so at Barry Katz at X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram. And you can follow me there or any social media platform. Or you can reach me at my website at barrykatz.com. Or more importantly, if you want to, you can watch this episode on my YouTube channel. And I think you'll enjoy it a lot. And you just subscribe and you'll get notifications for all of these great interviews in video format as well. I did a podcast with Troy Bond, and I had mentioned that I spoke to Dave Attell in New York City, and he had shared with me that he thought it'd be a great idea if I interviewed some different young comedians that are coming up and doing really well and gaining a great following and touring and performing to fans that really love them based on what they put out there in the world, but they're not necessarily the comedians out there with the most credits, the most years, maybe not even the most extraordinary individual routines that you could compare to the Chappelles, the Rocks, the Jim Jefferies of the world. But they're doing something really, really special, and they're on their way, and they are creating routines that will one day be stacked up to those people, and they're really building an enormous, wonderful following. And my guest today for this special single episode is no exception to that rule, Morgan J. Really, really unique, interesting guy, and I really, really thought that when I met him, he had this really interesting way about him, sort of like those rare people where the darkness and the light are smashing together, and whichever side wins, is something that you don't know where it's all going to shake out, but it's what makes his comedy so special and unique. And I felt that he was the kind of guy who really forged forward in a way where he believed in the kind of comedy that he was doing, which was musical, which, as all of us know, is very rare in the comedy business because a lot of people don't look highly on music and comedy for some reason. I think that reason might be that it's obviously very challenging to plant your feet and make people laugh with your mind and your mouth and the microphone slinging jokes and stories. And sometimes a musical instrument acts like lighter fuel on a fire. But Morgan doesn't pay much attention to that. He just keeps moving forward and gaining fans and putting out content that makes people happy, entertains them, and makes them think while simultaneously weaving in a musical background to the comedy. And I think that he's a really, really unique strategist and a guy that has been doing comedy for much longer than people give him credit for. Over a decade. Well over a decade. But sometimes people think artists are an overnight sensation. But very few things are overnight sensations. And Morgan proves that with hard work, dedication, and never giving up, that you can do something really, really special and change the way people listen when it comes to you. And let me tell you something. If you can figure out a way to do that, you're going to have the kind of rise and progression and continued success that Morgan J has.
Here we go in 3, 2.
This show will have laughter.
I got everybody pregnant with Barry Katz and semen.
I'm not comfortable with the tone this is taking.
If you're undeniable, you will not be denied.
If you want to be successful in show business, you get yourself a Jew white manager like Barry Katz.
Being a manager is just turning no's into yeses.
Creating holy shit moments.
Undeniable.
You f***ing firing me up, Katz.
I love this man.
Is there anything else I should know? You're on.
What?
Out of the air!
Barry Katz.
Back in the house.
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 Let's do this.
All right. And without further ado, let me introduce Morgan J. Morgan is a musician and comedian based in Los Angeles and has made appearances on MTV's Wild and Out, NBC, and Comedy Central. A first-generation American, he takes his musical influences from his Brazilian and Italian backgrounds and 90s upbringing. He got his start in New York, where he attended the Tisch School of the Arts, while at the same time doing stand-up in the backrooms and bars of the alternative New York comedy scene. He's won multiple awards and festivals across the U.S., but with millions of followers across his social media platforms, he's most recognized from his viral TikToks and Instagram posts. With well over a decade of performance experience, his ability to improvise, make music, and do stand-up has delighted audiences all over the country. Morgan was a semi-finalist on NBC's Bring in the Funny and a featured writer-performer for the 2021 Viacom CBS Showcase. But most importantly, through his social media, he's found a brand new audience on TikTok, where his videos have garnered over 20 million views and over 500,000 followers. His most recent comedy special, I Hope My Ex Doesn't See This, is available to watch now on YouTube and streaming on Spotify and iTunes. This fall, he'll be starting his 30-city tour all over the country. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my guest today,
It is tremendous to have him here, Morgan J.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here to talk to you. So
you are here for a very specific reason.
Okay, I want to hear it.
It was Dave Attell of the Comedy Cellar last week that took me aside and said, Barry, you know, it's time to start bringing on people who aren't, who haven't been doing it, you know, 27 years and right. You know, or these yeah. older people. You know, there's a new group of guys and they're all different kinds of ways they do comedy.
Yeah.
And so I thought to myself, I want to do a group of newer guys on the scene, yeah. even though you've been doing it a long time.
Sure.
People who do different things, not just monologists.
Right, right. You know, 100%. Yeah,
and 100%. So you being a musical artist, I thought it was really, really important to be here because I love musical comedy. I pitched shows with musical comedy. The Smothers Brothers was one of my first three comedy albums I had, the one where he's breaking the guitar over the other one's head. And I don't know if you ever heard that album. Since you are a musical comedian, I would hope that you have.
Yeah, I haven't listened to that.
You have not.
I haven't. I feel like I should go now.
That's okay. It's like it's so. Yeah. So I used to love it, and I still do. And the thing that's tough about where comedians who do music get a bad rap is that originally a lot of the comedians doing guitar comedy or musical comedy were doing parody comedy.
Oh, I never did that.
And so that's what I think turned a lot of traditional comedians off.
Yeah.
And then a lot of traditional comedians, when I say traditional, the people who just plant their feet mm-hmm. and do it with no,
like, set up punchline, just tell
yeah,
the jokes.
Yeah, or stories or whatever. Yeah. I think they feel like the musical instrument is an accelerator.
Cheating. We're cheating.
Yeah, it's like an accelerator. And would you get the same laughs without the accelerator? And they're going on without the accelerator. And they're trying to be as good as you. And it's very hard for a regular stand-up comedian who plants their feet and doesn't have an instrument to follow somebody who does have an instrument.
Yeah, I mean, I went last on the showcases, so.
Yeah, and because they're always going to put you last. Yeah,
that's fine. I get that. And it makes sense because I've gone in the middle of a lineup. And I'm not saying I'm funnier than anybody, but it definitely is like music feels like the end of a show.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it messes the energy up. You know what I mean?
I always tell anybody running a comedy room, though, which is probably the worst advice for the comedy show, but the best advice for their career.
Yeah.
I always say, you want your room to get better. You want your room to get the word out. And when you have any great comic come in, you put them on whenever they want to go on.
Sure.
But what if it ruins the show? Then it ruins the show.
Yeah.
You got to take care of them because those people where it ruined the show, they'll still come back because Bill Burr came in the room and opened the show, or he went third or whatever.
I remember I was doing Chocolate Sundays in Los Angeles, which is honestly, in my opinion, one of the best rooms there is to perform at. And I was new to the room. It's a very tough room to get past on. And I was on the lineup, but then Donnell Rawlings showed up, and then George Wallace showed up, and they both bumped me, and I had to go after to the two of them. And I mean, I did great anyway, but it was but just like what you're saying, it's like put them up when they want to go up. And I think they each did like 20 minutes. They were supposed to do like 12 minutes, and so now the show is already like way over, and then I still got to go up and sing my songs, and I don't look like anybody else on the lineup, you know what I mean? So
The audience, how many people were not African American in the audience?
Well, it's at the Laugh Factory, so it's kind of like a tourist destination, but I mean, I would say it's like 90%. It's a black crowd for sure. Yeah, I mean,
and do you do better with black audiences or white audiences?
It depends, because I do change up my set a little bit. So I have a lot of different types of songs, and I have some more R&B kind of vibey types of songs, and I'll do that for the black rooms. And then for the whiter rooms, I'll change it up a little bit, Because I remember I actually did, so I opened for D-Ray Davis every once in a while. Shout out to D-Ray because I owe a lot to him. He put me in front of a lot of, you know, I was doing comedy for 12 years before anybody really asked me to open for them. And D-Ray Davis was the first one to do that. And
love that guy.
Yeah, he's amazing. And probably one of the reasons he's like where you could, how I got on Wildin' Out. That's kind of where that origin story starts. But he brought me to Chicago for his big Chicago New Year's Eve show. It's a Friday night and a Saturday night show. This was this past New Year's Eve. You know, it was like Donnell Rawlings, Lunell, T.I., me, right? Some cartoon looking guy with a guitar. The first show Friday night went well. You know, I did 12 minutes. And then I switched up my set the second night just a little bit. You know, did a different song choice for the opening. And by minute eight, about a third of the crowd was booing me. And so that was the first time that had ever happened. And, you know, the thing about black crowds is that, like, when they love you, they really let you know. And when they don't like you, they really won't let you know too. You know what I mean? So
what's fascinating about what you did there,
yeah,
is there's two philosophies.
Yeah.
If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Right.
But there's the second philosophy is that no risk,
yeah,
no reward.
Yeah.
So I actually, before you came here, I respect you.
Oh.
But I actually have a wild amount of respect for you after you told me that story.
Oh, man.
And I'll tell you why. Because firstly, for the audience, just so they should know, as a white comedian who has worked black audiences, they are uniquely qualified to tell you that the reason why they want to work black audiences is because if you can make a black audience laugh,
yeah,
then
you
know you are there and you are funny. And it's because there's so much honesty and truth with those audiences, they'll let you know right away if it's not happening or it is. And so you go on at a big show New Year's
Eve. 4,000 seats, yeah.
And New Year's Eve is a night. It's a really tough night for comedy, believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's not the best night for comedy because people are dressed up exceptionally well on those nights.
They're already drinking before they get to the show.
And they're drinking before they go.
Yeah.
So you got two things going against you. Number one, they're drinking before they get there or doing drugs. And number two, they're dressed up really fancily. And as you can tell by comedy at the Academy Awards, dressing up and comedy don't always go together.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And so,
and laughing is a fun layback.
So then you go on the first show, and I'm not saying you got a standing ovation, but you did it and you held your own, and they laughed and they applauded.
You gotta understand, where I am on the lineup, it's like there's 30 minutes of a DJ while people walk in. Then there was like an R&B artist who did a full musical number with a dance. Then D-Ray goes up and does about 12 minutes of warm up, and then I go up. And people are still kind of finding their seats as I'm going up. You know what I mean? There's people, you see the lights, people walking in the, you know. So
yeah,
that's kind of the circumstance.
So you went on, you did it, you held your own, it went well. And then you decide, I'm going to change it up and take a risk.
Yeah.
For an audience where it's already a risk.
Right. Yeah.
And so, and I think the fact that you got booed, it was so good for you.
Oh, yeah. That's very, by the way, that year, this last year, I had like one of the best years I could have had in my career. So it was like such a poetic ending to the year to get booed at the end of the year. It was like, because I was like, oh, I was like on top of the world. I was like, I got this thing happened. Da, da, da. And then that happened. It was like,
it's the greatest thing, yeah, because it's your, that crowd gave you a reset button.
Yeah.
That crowd, as I like to say, took the net out from under you
yeah,
and made you perform in a way where you could get hurt, and you knew you were vulnerable, and you knew you had to work harder. If you had killed and gotten a standing ovation coming into that next year, you'd think to yourself, maybe I don't have to work that hard.
I got to tell you, like, after that show, that that fear that you kind of have, you know, for the last, like, 6 years, I think when I was starting out, sets were either, you know, they were bad, they were good, and they were great, and then now they're just like good, they're great, or they're great. I think you can judge a comic by how they deal with the when they're bombing. Like, I could tell, you know, if they can bomb gracefully, you know what I mean? And
there's no bombing gracefully in a black audience.
No, there isn't. And after that show, I tell you what, I was, you know, and D-Ray hit me up to do other shows, and I was afraid. Like, when I went back to Chocolate Sundays, I was like, man, this could actually happen again at any point. It never goes away. It could be 16 years in.
But that's good. But also, you know, I'll say it. I have a tremendous amount of respect for D-Ray, and now I have even more respect for him. You know why? Because he put you on.
Yeah.
In a really important show for him, and he believed in you, and half of the audience, which is one show, it didn't work out, and he could have easily said, hey man, you know, I love you, but I can't, I'm not gonna put you on any more shows.
He was really nice,
and he's like that manager who has the relief pitcher who goes in, his ace goes in or whatever, and gets shelled, and just puts him in the very next game. And that's something that most artists won't do. That if they take the hit and see something, they'll just, okay, let me just,
I mean, I went up to him after the show. I mean, so just so you know, like, I bombed, I got off, you know, I got booed, I go to my dressing room, I close the door, I go into the bathroom of the dressing room, I close the door, and I just sort of sat there for 5 minutes, because I was just sort of like, this, it doesn't feel like a real, it doesn't even feel like a real moment. It's like 1,000 people are booing at you. And eventually I went to his room, and I just was like, hey man, you know, you gave me this big opportunity, I feel like I fucked it up. And he's like, don't even worry man, like, you know, everybody gets booed here every once in a while. Little Howie got booed here, Tiffany got booed here, T.I. got booed at, like, Madison Square Garden. You're fine, man. People get booed sometimes. It's gonna happen sometimes. So he was really nice about it, and gave me some advice and pointers and stuff like that. And so, you know, big shout out to him. So, yeah.
Would you have preferred it when that was happening if he had walked out in the middle and just took the mic and said, hey, listen, everybody, it's New Year's Eve. Let's have a great time. Yeah. This is my friend. He's here because he's funny. He's not here because he gets booed all over the country. So please, these last 3 minutes, give him your attention. Or would you prefer you had it the way you had it?
I prefer the way it went. I mean, you know, I think I started in 2007. I was doing my first show. I was about 6 months in. I was 20, and I was doing my first show at Caroline's. I was still doing some bringer shows. And I invited, like, friends and family, because my parents lived in White Plains at the time, and I was staying there between semesters at NYU. And I was just sort of like, I'm doing Caroline's. I'm like, this is it. I'm gonna, because I'd been killing in front of college audiences, you know. But you know, Caroline's, it's a near Times Square. It's a tourist kind of. You're gonna get people from all over the world, you know.
Was
yeah, of course. RIP to the club. Wonderful club. I think it closed last.
This year, end of the year, yeah.
And
amazing club.
Yeah, and my mom came. My mom's an immigrant, and she came to the show with my stepdad
from Brazil.
Yeah. And I remember, like, I bombed really hard. Like, you could hear people audibly sigh in the crowd.
In front of your mom.
In front of my mom.
For one
of the first times she saw me. And then we're taking the car ride back to White Plains from, you know, from Times Square. And it was like, just nobody talked the whole ride home, and nobody talked the whole night. That was the first time I really bombed. I actually cried that night. And because I never felt that kind of failure. It was like so intense, you know what I mean? And then the next day, she was like, hey, we didn't really say anything to you in the car because you were really terrible. You were awful.
That's the first thing she said.
That's what she said. She said, you were awful. She doesn't remember saying this, but you were bad. And I know you can do better than that. And you know you can do better than that. And that's what she said. And honestly, I would prefer that than, you know, like, you know, sweetie, you did great. You'll get him next time. Like, you're... because the reality is I didn't do well, and I think that's one of the things I like about comedy is that it's the only art form where there's a definitive outcome. You know what I mean? It's not like you go to a museum and you see a painting and you laugh, or you know, it's like people paid money to laugh, and if you don't make them laugh, then like that's, you didn't technically do your job. You know what I mean?
Hey everybody, I hope you're enjoying this episode as much as I am. If you made it this far and you haven't fallen asleep yet, then you must be the type of person who's serious about having a career in the comedy business. That's why I'm offering you my Blueprint for Success, a one-of-a-kind all-access pass into my knowledge and experience after over 40 years of working with the best of the best in this crazy entertainment industry. I'll tell you all the stories, all the philosophies, give you all the great special guests, and even give you one-on-one private consultations to help you expand, enhance, and skyrocket your comedy career. Just go to barrykatz.com and click on Blueprint for Success to learn more about my groundbreaking digital academy that I've created just for you. With it, we can take your career so far that one day, instead of listening to this podcast, you'll be interviewed on it.
I want to talk about your process.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the process of you working on your premises and making your routines this uniquely original thing that is very hard to do? And you said one of your mentors, idols is Bo Burnham and people like that who take the music and put it in a way that, I don't know how to say it, but like what you do is not for everybody.
No, for sure.
And what Bo does is not for everybody. 100%. But having the confidence to know you're going to be true to the way the words are written in your mind and how they go to your voice and then come down to the music, and you're going to gain your fans through your point of view the way you want to and not the way other people want you to.
Right.
So how does that process work, and take me through like one bit that you do where you, how it started, like from 24 hours beforehand to like after it completed and was successful.
It's so the process has definitely changed over the last couple years. Now when I write a song, I try to find an evergreen topic. You know, I think there's some comedy songs, and the type of songs that give comedy a bad name or give music comedy a bad name are these like they're just like a premise and a joke, right? But I'm trying to pick. One of the songs I'm working on right now is it's called No Pressure, No Worries, right? And the concept of the song is kind of like if I ask you to go to a party, if I'm having a party and I ask you to come to the party. And I'm like, hey, I'm having a party this weekend. Do you want to come? No pressure, no worries. But the story I'm telling is the person singing the song has a low sense of self-worth and self-value. Instead of saying, hey, I'm having a party, I'd love for you to be there. There's two different ways to phrase it, right? One says like, hey, I want you to. So we're exploring this idea that a lot of people, a lot of younger people now who are anxious, who have trouble asking for what they want. So that's the idea, right? That's the concept. So now I'm going to brainstorm all the situations in which we feel this way. So for example, like if we make plans, I get anxious about texting. I feel like I'm talking too much, like going around the way. Long story short is, I have an evergreen concept, and then I also try to find a moment in the song where I can incorporate the crowd, because one thing I've noticed is that audiences like when something is about them, and it feels, even if I do the same crowd work every show, for the people watching, it's a unique experience to them. You know, we know people have the same sort of crowd work jokes that come up, mm-hmm. but for the people watching, they're like, oh my God, how do they do that? You know, but people have been doing this for 30 years. Obviously they're going to know how to handle like heckler or something like that. So it's kind of like that. So we write the verses and the choruses, and then I leave a little space for a couple questions to insert the crowd. And then we just kind of run it over and over again. I mean, with songs,
you say we, who's we?
I say the Royal Week because it's like me and the crowd. I feel like the crowd and I kind of have a collaborative process too, because it's the, you know, the song changes over the course of.
So your process is such where at least 50% of it is using, I always say the audience is your writing partner.
Yeah.
I love that philosophy and that phrase. And I remember when I interviewed Lance Crowther, who's won 4 Emmy Awards. He's like adamant about that. You know, the audience is that's what it is. It's got to be that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, but for you, what you're saying is it's like almost 50% of what you're doing is developing the bit with the crowd. So you don't develop it. You don't finish something in your notebook and in the room and working it out in front of the mirror and then go in and then it's perfect. It's never been perfect.
No, we have the blueprint. And the song might start out being, you know, 7 minutes long until we cut it all the way down to 3 minutes to 5 minutes. And then.
So you've never, ever written something and practiced it and rehearsed it and it had a beginning and an end and you went on and it killed and it stayed that way for the rest of your career?
No, because for me, you know, I was doing stand-up for 6 years and I had actually auditioned for JFL when I was like 24 doing stand-up and I didn't get it and I was like, I just wasn't having fun with the stand-up process of it, where you write the jokes and do the jokes over and over again, that's when I kind of started transitioning to music. And I was like, if I'm going to keep doing this, this has to be fun for me, which is why incorporating the crowd in all the songs is exciting for me, because every show is going to be different for me too. And even a year or two down there, I mean, I filmed my special in December and some of the songs or bits that you do, all of a sudden you discover some new things and you're like, man, that would have been great in the special, you know? So it's always changing for me. I'm always like, can we make it better? You know? And coming from a music perspective, there's songs that I've written 5 or 6 years ago that I'm just like, this one isn't ready yet. I'm going to have to let this marinate and maybe I'll sing it and it will come up when I can have an idea for it. You know what I mean? So, you know, the idea is ready when it's ready, but I'm always trying to play with it and keep it fresh and exciting, because I have people who come to shows over and over again, they request songs also, which is a different experience in traditional stand-up. They'll request the songs.
Well, that's what's great about being a musical comedian that traditional comedians hate.
Yeah.
They finish their set on an hour special and they can't do it anymore. You go on and do a show at a theater and people are requesting songs that you've done.
Yeah.
And so you get to do live performances like Mick Jagger is 80 still singing Satisfaction.
Look, I'm sure Adam Sandler, when he does a show, people want him to do the Hanukkah song
every time.
You know what I mean, it's just one of those things. If it's a hit, it's a hit, and people want to hear it, they want to sing along to it. And that's, in that respect, I am cheating a little bit, but I love it and I like singing the song. So, you know,
what are the things that are always in your head that are like wearing ankle weights when you're walking through the business, and how do you cope with those things that really, really get in your mind and bring you down?
Yeah, the number one thing that pops into my head is, will I be able to write a song as good as the last one? You know, will I be able to write a bit that I like that's funny as the last one?
You just said something that, and this is, you know, putting my manager hat on.
Yeah.
What I would actually want you to rephrase that sentence.
Okay. How would I?
Do you know how I'd want you to rephrase it? Just a little tiny switch.
Could I write a song that's even funnier?
Thank you.
Than the last one? Okay, yeah, that's even funnier than the last one. Yeah.
Because that's the thing. You know, it's like the people that work and are number one. David Copperfield does 600.
I saw him literally a couple months ago.
Yeah, the 683 shows a year.
It's crazy.
He's 65 years old. He owns 11 islands.
Yeah.
I interviewed him. I said, what the fuck are you doing? I mean, like, you just relax. You got a mansion. You got a museum. You got everything.
Yeah.
What are you doing? You've been number one for 35 years. And he said, Barry, I like being number one. I said, but can't you just take your foot off the gas? No. And so that's why I say what I say, because a lot of times as an artist, you're coming up and you're trying to move up.
Yeah.
It's you're always trying to move up the ladder.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, when I represented Chappelle, he was trying to get up the ladder and taking people's places and moving up. Burr, the same way.
Yeah.
CK.
Yeah.
And to get up the ladder, you have to keep topping yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't keep topping yourself, then another person passes you.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because I have this philosophy that it's better to evolve than it is to try to be the best, you know, because if you try to, you know, have the top seat, you kind of have nowhere to go from there. So that's why with every hour that I do, I try to go out of my comfort zone creatively than what I would have done in the last one, you know, so.
Yeah, and my feeling is that I just want to make sure I get this straight with you.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you to think I got to be the best in the world.
Sure.
I mean, granted, I mean, I'm not going to on anybody for wanting to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
But what I'm suggesting, and you already know because you're wired this way, is to just be the best of you.
Yeah.
And if you're the best of you, then the world will find you. Mm-hmm. And whether you want it or not, you're going to fly up the ladder.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think we have to, you know, I say this all the time, but like, you have to be the first person to buy a ticket to your own show. And so
I always love that, what you're saying there. You That's know. Just so
I just feel like a lot of people forget that, like, you can't be, you have to be excited about the show. And if you're excited about it, they'll be excited about it. Because that's what was happening with the stand-up. Like, objectively, people were laughing. But would I have gone to see me? Probably not when I was doing stand-up, you know?
This is what I tell every young person who isn't even in the business, who's like on the other side of the business, like who's going into a job interview. God, what do I do? There's 100 people going up for this job. How do I get this job? I said, pretend you're the person interviewing 100 people, and would you hire you? And what can you do to make it so you hire yourself as opposed to those other 99 people?
Yeah, it's it was, you know, Sebastian in an interview was talking about, like, when people buy a ticket to see you, they're not just buying a ticket, you know, they hired a babysitter, they paid for parking, they drove an hour, 2 hours into the city, they got chicken fingers and drinks. It's like a $400 night. And so, you know, you got to make sure you give them a good show, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Tom Dreesen told me that Frank Sinatra, he had this conversation. It was Frank Sinatra's opening act for 15 years.
Yeah.
And they're going to a show, I think, in a limo. And he just says, Frank, can I just ask you a question? He says, yeah, what is it, Tom? You know, why do I have to wear these tuxes and these suits and all the, you know, the bow tie? Like, what? Yeah. Like the shoe, the nice shoes. Why can't we just perform like in regular clothes? And Frank said to Tom, hey, listen, Tom, you know, there's people that see our show as just like a plumber. He's married to a school teacher. They, you know, they save up all their money to come to Vegas and come to the show. Don't you think they deserve to see?
Yeah.
An act that's in the greatest outfit that could possibly be, giving him the greatest show ever.
100%. Yeah.
And so I get what you're saying. So a few more questions, sure. And I'll let you go.
Yeah.
What do you see for yourself in the future? Not the near future. What do you see for yourself 10 years from now? 20 years from now, and what do you visualize the greatest comedians in the world saying about you?
Realistically, I see myself at the residency somewhere doing like a show like that, because my show is involving. I've thought about this a lot, and maybe having a full band of some sort, bringing back that kind of, literally what we were just talking about, that kind of style of show that I feel like you don't see a lot of. You know, I see, you saw bumping mics. They kind of have an energy where it's like very, but a show like that. And I would love other comics to to say that I created work that, you know, still stands the test of time, you know, that's evergreen, that you can go back and listen to over and over again, you know. But as far as shows, I think I'll be performing live forever. I think that's going to be the one art form that perform, like live performance, is the one job that is never going to go away, you know. Unless, you know, robots take that too. But I think people are still going to want that connection, and I'm going to want it too. And it's always invigorating, and it gives me life and energy to connect with people. And I mean, it's like the I don't think comedians realize, like, I'm not saying we're doctors or people who, you know, Malala's out there, but we make an impact on people's life. And, you know, sometimes you'll get a message from somebody who's like, literally, I mean, I've gotten messages like this, like, I literally was at my lowest point, and I was just on my phone in my car and YouTube, and your video popped up, and like, these moments, you have no idea what impact you have on people. So that's why I try to take it serious, but not too serious, you know what I mean? Because at this point.
Awesome. Last question I have for you. What advice do you have for the young comedian who possibly is somewhere in the world, growing up in a different place, or who's with a family who emigrated to the United States and isn't having it so easy, and to figure out a way to move past it and get past all the obstacles and have the kind of amazing career you're having?
I'm going to give two pieces of advice. The first one is really simple, really easy, and it's so lame. You've probably heard this before. Just show up on time or show up early. I know this is insane, but it's the difference between, like, getting the spot and not. I mean, I was literally talking to a booker last night about it, because people don't show up for their spots sometimes. And if you just show up on time or you're there, that could be the difference between somebody from this network seeing you and somebody not seeing you. You know what I mean? And the second thing is, be nice to yourself and be patient with yourself. For me, when I started comedy, I literally was like, Morgan, give yourself 10 years to do this. If you can't make money in 10 years, you could do something else. And I think now younger people, they see people go viral and they're like, all right, I have to be successful tomorrow. And that's kind of not a career, you know? So anytime you want to try something, I give myself 2 months when I'm trying something new. That's the time period. So I'm going to do this for 2 months. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to try something different. So be patient and just give yourself time. And also, like, if it's not working and you don't like it, be honest with yourself. My best friend in comedy, he quit comedy 5 or 6 years in. He honestly is funnier than me, but he's like, this lifestyle is not for me. And he's a doctor now. He's going to be the funniest doctor there is. But like, also have the courage to be like, maybe this is not the dream for me. Also, if you're not into it, you're like, really got to love what you're going to do. I'm like, I don't want to discourage people now. I'm like telling people quit. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, be honest with how you feel with the work that you're doing. If it's not bringing you joy, then you shouldn't do it, you know?
Awesome. Morgan Jay.
I appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much for doing this. It's an honor to talk to you. I appreciate you. As always, this has been Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. And if you like the show, tell all your friends. And if you don't like the show, tell all your friends.
You get all the money, drive that fancy car. All the people love you, 'cause you're going far. Life is for the dreamers. They have all to gain. It's never quite over till it all feels the same. You pick your own poison, dig your own grave. Down in the valley, a fortune.
Thank you for listening to Industry Standard with Barry Katz. If you'd like more info on our schedule of new episodes or how to reach Barry through Twitter, Facebook, or email, go to BarryKatz.com. Before you leave, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast, leave a comment, and rate it, even if you think it blows. Thank you for your support, and have a great day.
Hey, everybody. Let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from Industry Standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business. I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to BarryKatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.